This meeting is now being recorded.
I want to welcome everybody back to our management discussion series. I'm Robert Merrill, Institutional Sales here for Syndicate Capital Markets, and I'll be your moderator for today's call. We'll have a question and answer session near the end of the call. If anybody would like to ask a question, your lines will be open at that time. Today we are pleased to be joined by Steve Rizzone and George Holmes, I believe, from Energous. I want to welcome you both and thank you for joining our call series. Now let me turn the call over to my semiconductor analysts, Cody Acree and David Williams.
Sorry, David. It's Cody. I'm used to Robert unmuting my line, and I had to do it manually myself. Sorry about that. So with that, guys, thanks, Robert, Steve, and George. For everybody who doesn't know, Steve is the CEO of Energous, and George Holmes is Senior VP of Sales. Steve, was George able to join us on the call today?
Yes, I believe so. George, you with us?
I'm with you.
Perfect. Welcome, George and Steve. Maybe if we could start at a high level. We've got a pretty good turnout so far, so not knowing everybody's familiarity, if you maybe could just start with a bit of a high level of Energous and maybe tell us why investors would be interested in your company.
Certainly, and thank you for the opportunity today, Cody. So Energous is an early-stage company focused on wireless power. And when we say wireless power, we're talking about significant power at a distance with full mobility, all under software control. We can take this into a number of levels later on the call, but fundamentally that's Energous and the Energous WattUp technology. Energous is a young company. We were founded in 2012 by a friends and family investment to our founder, Michael Liebman. The first investment in the company was made in May of 2013. It was a convert at $5 million. This allowed Michael to develop his second-generation prototype and also bring in professional management. George and myself, a very experienced management team, joined in October of 2013. In December of 2013, we filed our S-1. We took the company public in March of 14. We raised about $27 million in a four times oversubscribed offering. The demand for the technology and the interest in our WattUp technology has been so significant that in December of 2014, we raised a secondary, another $20 million. So a total of about $53 million has been raised so far to date. We are a public company on NASDAQ. Our symbol is WATT, W-A-T-T. Our model is a licensing model. It's a very efficient model. We are developing the WattUp technology, and we'll develop reference designs that we will provide to strategic partners who have signed joint development and licensing agreements with us. We expect to see the first of these products hit the market in Q1 of 2016. We're about 50 people, including consultants and full-time employees, out of San Jose, California. And we're very, very focused on intellectual property. We have approximately 127 patents that have been filed surrounding the WattUp technology. At the 30,000-foot level, that's Energous and WattUp.
Steve, now wireless charging has been around for a while. I think if you go back into the kind of the 2000s, wasn't Palm even trying to do this at one point to some degree of success or the other. And since then, just even more recently, I think it's begun to pick up a bit of headline steam. Could you talk about maybe the evolution of wireless charging? why you've chosen your approach and what some of the other approaches are out there that, that potentially could be competitors.
Well, certainly. Let me speak about the market in general, and then I think I'll turn it over to George to speak about the competitive landscape specifically. So the concept of wireless charging has been around for some time, as you said. It really emerged into a number of different market segments. You have the tightly coupled market, which was, or segment, which was the first the kind of iteration of wireless coupling. And this is magnetic induction. It's a conductive. It's one-to-one where you actually take your enabled device and drop it on top of a mat on a one-to-one basis. There are contact points, and it's very, very specific conduction associated with this tightly coupled. The technology further emerged from there, and then you have the loosely coupled, which you're starting to hear more and more about. This is magnetic resonance. It's one to many. You have a larger coil. You can put many different devices. They're not location specific. And now you're starting to get some separation up to 18 inches. With the advent of Energys last year, a third segment has now emerged called uncoupled. And this means power at a distance. With full mobility. And that's how we see the market segmenting. You've got the tightly coupled and loosely coupled, which are really ideally designed for portable devices, devices where you take your dot device and you put it on top of a mat or you drive it over a coil and you remain stationary, versus uncoupled, which is all about mobility. And so these are the three segments that the segmentations of the market today. And as we'll talk about later, I'm sure Energys has a clear first-to-market advantage, a significant first-to-market advantage in this new emerging uncoupled arena. George, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk a bit about the specifics as it relates to our competition.
Okay, great. Thanks, Steve. I think if you're going to talk about competition, you also have to talk about the consortiums that really support these different types of technology that Steve just described. I mean, clearly there were three main consortiums up until CES this past year, and now with the consolidation of PNA and A4WP, there's going to be two main consortiums out there in the wireless power space. But if we talk about it in the three categories that Steve described, tightly coupled is really the wireless power consortium dominated by, the players in that space. It's marketed under the brand Qi. Power Matters Alliance, which is dominated by the company PowerMat, both focused on one-to-one charging solutions. Loosely coupled is A4WP. There is some work being done and announcements made by the WPC in this area as well. But A4WP, the big player in that space, is Whitetricity. And then in the uncoupled space, it's, a combination of technologies, as Steve described, RF. There's a number of players in this space, so SIA, PowerCast, Humabox, ourselves. In the ultrasound segment, there's U-Beam that has been, in the press of late. And then in the laser segment, there's WePower and LaserMotive. The interesting thing about it is you look at these different technologies and the players within them, there is a blend of not only hardware companies, but also semiconductor companies supporting them. Today, there's a number of the major competitors in the semiconductor space that support either single mode or multi-mode chips, Freescale, Broadcom, IDTI, and TI, to name a few. The big announcements of late have happened at the Global World Congress. Obviously, the fact that Samsung has integrated wireless charging into the S6 and the fact that they offer both a transmitter and a receiver is very significant. The big winner there, or the big winners there, are IDTI and TI, as they both have multi-mode devices that are integrated in both the transmitter and the receiver from Samsung. So everybody got to take credit, WPC, PMA, Both got to take credit for winning that opportunity. I think from our perspective, the thing that's good about the fact that, you know, there's a lot of press in this area is it just really brings the consumer back to wireless charging. Wireless charging, as you described, has been out there now for 6-7 years. People have kind of gotten tired of hearing about, well, it's coming, and never really seeing any products in the marketplace that had great utility. I think what we see with the advent of the broadening of the standards community and, you know, to accept uncoupled as a key category, and the analysts starting to really focus in this area, is that while tightly coupled and loosely coupled are interesting technologies, as Steve described, for the portable application, there's still a need to do things for the mobile application, and uncoupled is the way to solve that problem. You'll see in the latest release from IHS, they've now created a category and are covering the uncoupled space. We're pretty happy with that. And the fact that the PMA asked us to not only join the PMA as part of the uncoupled working group, but actually to lead that as their chair. So lots of things happening in the competitive landscape, lots of players out there, but not the least of which is the challenges that we've seen historically in the tightly coupled and loosely coupled space for supporting a truly mobile device, and the fact that now there is a category to really focus in that area, and there's players there. I mean, clearly we had great success in our IPO and our secondary. Osaya was able to raise the money last year as well as Ubeam. So lots of activity in the space. We're excited about it. I think we're going to really dominate this category on a go-forward basis. Steve?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of points. I think that's a very accurate description. But fundamentally, we believe that the consumer is looking to solve a problem and affect a paradigm shift. The consumer today, as we understand it, is really tired of tethering. They're tired of continually monitoring the status of their device. And the tightly coupled and loosely coupled solutions really don't solve that problem. They're limited by the length of the power cord. And until Energys came on the market, the real concept of mobile charging was non-existent. I think the second point I'd like to make is that while there is competition in the uncoupled space, we monitor it very, very closely, as do our strategic partners, and we're very comfortable with the fact that we've got a very, very significant, upwards of 2 years, we would estimate, first-to-market advantage over any competitor in this environment. So, again, we're pleased with all of the press as it relates to wireless coupling, because we think it's now getting it back in front of the consumer. But we believe once the consumer really sees the utility that uncoupled solutions bring, that they're going to aggressively drive adoption. Cody?
Yeah, Steve, and thank you guys for that overview. But it does speak, I guess, to an industry that's still, even though it's been around for a little while, still fairly nascent. And you're talking about consumer driving adoption, yet it will be the OEMs that decide at least initially what the consumers get to choose from. And are we running the risk of the OEMs, the ODMs, seeing coupled, loosely coupled, uncoupled, multiple of variants within each one of those flavors, just having a paralysis by too many options, too much noise, maybe not having a real clear picture of the way the industry is going to go, and so everybody always waiting on somebody else to make the decision. Is that a concern for you, and is that happening?
Well, not really. When we first put the business plan, George and I put the business plan together for Energys in 2013, we thought that a good year for us in 2014 would be to sign 4 or 5 joint development agreements, and that we wouldn't see interest from silicon companies until 2017 timeframe because, as you know, silicon companies are typically slow to adopt. And we very much underestimated the interest that the WhatUp technology would drive. When we came out at the CES show in 2014, we had such strong participation from OEMs that we knew that we were on to something, and we were on to something significant. And in 2014, we signed 16 joint development agreements, two of which are with silicon companies. One is announced Dialog. The second is one that we can't announce because of the proprietary nature. Silicon companies have rallied behind the WhatUp technology simply because of its utility. The fact is that everyone, all of the ODMs, all the OEMs, all of the networking companies, the silicon companies, they all, the mobile companies and consumer product companies, they all appreciate the fact that, as I said earlier, the consumer wants this tethering problem solved. And there's a great interest in being first in. There's a significant interest in differentiating from OEMs and ODMs. And, again, that's what's driving the interest that we have and the engagements that we have, which are over 100 active engagements right now with, I would venture, every consumer-facing company, major silicon company, and OEM, ODM that you can think of. And so, again, it's a great opportunity for us because I think our timing is right. The maturity of the market is such where the first generation tightly coupled and loosely coupled have really kind of built a level of interest, and that interest is being expanded. And once our product hits the market, again, as I said, we believe the consumer is just going to be all over them. It's going to further accelerate the whole adoption of uncoupled technologies.
Well, and last question for me, and then I'm going to turn it over for David. He's got some questions on your development agreements and maybe where your products end up or where you see them ending up. But with some of your competitors, especially in the uncoupled space, like you mentioned, Osaya raising some capital, and I'm sure if they were on this call, they would tell us why their approach was going to be the end all be. How do you envision the market 5 years down the road? Do you envision this finally coming to a funnel where a singular approach becomes the dominant standard, or do you envision a breadth of these commingling in applications?
Well, our goal is clearly an element of ubiquity. We believe that the WhatUp technology can be as ubiquitous as Wi-Fi in a much more accelerated time frame. It is a closely coupled or closely related technology to Wi-Fi, and that we operate in the same open frequency ISM bands as Wi-Fi, and there's a very natural pairing between wire-free power and Wi-Fi. So our goal is an element of ubiquity. Of course, the markets that we're targeting are huge. I mean, we don't speak numbers because they're so significant, so large. But if you take any of the major markets that we'll look to participate in, from smartphones to tablets to wearables to Internet of Things and toys and cylindrical batteries, all of these markets are extremely huge, and all of these markets really need a wire-free power solution such as WhatUp brings to the market. The good news for us, as I said, is that we've got a clear first-to-market advantage. I mean, we are aggressively commercializing our product now, also with the assistance of the major consumer product company, that the agreement that we announced earlier in the year, which is a joint development agreement. And so we are aggressively commercializing our technology now. We believe, as I said, that given the interest in the technology, that we have the opportunity to dominate the space. It's so huge, though, that, again, we don't think that we'll be the only player there. We just expect to be the main player.
And, David, I believe you had some joint development agreement questions, if you want to go ahead with those.
Sure. Thanks, Cody. I appreciate it. Good afternoon, guys. David Williams here. I know initially you had stated a goal of products with the WhatUp being commercially available by Black Friday of this year. But with the recent signing of your JDA, it looks like that target was pushed out to Q1, Q2 of next year. Can you talk a little bit about that, the push out of those revenues and what the realization is of really bringing those in the early part of next year?
Well, a couple of points here. First of all, you mentioned the push out of revenues. We don't see a push out of revenues. We've actually booked our first revenues in the form of non-recurring engineering from the joint development agreement that you talked about. But last year, we entered into a number of JDAs. These were exploratory, where you look at the opportunity to engage with a potential strategic partner, what their plans are for commercializing the product, how it fits with your strategy as it relates to product rollout, timing, so on and so forth. And we engaged with this particular top tier, and again, this is one of the top 10 commercial consumer product companies in the world based on total revenues. And so this is a very, very significant player. And so we've engaged with them since early last year, and we signed an agreement early this year. And as part of that agreement, it has certain first-to-market advantages. This is not an exclusive agreement by any means. It provides for first-to-market advantages in certain markets, and we've defined those as smartphones and accessories. And so our joint development partner here will be able to bring these products first to market, and then once they do, then our commitment is over and we're free to engage with anyone else in those markets. What that's done is that last year we talked about battery backpacks being our low-hanging fruit and the easiest way for us to get to the market. And our target was to have battery backpacks on the shelves for the consumer by Black Friday of this year, as you said. Battery backpacks are covered under this first-to-market advantage agreement. And so we had to shift our development focus as it relates to first product on the pegs from battery backpacks over to cylindrical batteries, Internet of Things, and toys, which is what we're finalizing in terms of our licensing and development agreements now in those business segments. And to do so, it cost us a quarter. So we do not think that we'll have these products or products from these market segments to the consumer until the end of the first quarter of 2016 or the beginning of the second quarter of 2016. But again, we think this is obviously the right strategic decision for us, coupling with such a significant consumer product company. While it may delay an offering, it certainly is accelerating our overall commercialization process. It also represents a very significant opportunity in terms of NRE measured in millions and licensing dollars also measured into the multi-million. And so, again, a great opportunity for us, and it just caused a bit of a slight right turn in terms of timing and getting actual products into the consumer.
And then when could we expect to see additional products coming to market after this initial JDA first to market is in place?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand. Are you talking about in the protected segments, or are you talking about additional products in general beyond the first ones that we'll look to release at the end of the first quarter of next year?
Yeah, maybe both if we could. Just kind of trying to get an idea of how long that we should be thinking about after Q1, Q2 here. When can you start releasing and really ramping up the revenues and through the other development agreements you have and other products that are out there?
Well, the good news for us is that there are so many interested partners in line, and it's a matter for us to prioritize them and to work with them, and also to develop a reference design that can span a number of strategic partners. And so we've said that we'll receive initial revenues in 2015. That goal has been accomplished. We've already booked our first, and we'll see additional revenues in 2014 and 15 in terms of additional NRE. We'll see our first royalty revenues the first half of 2016. and those will ramp as additional strategic partners start to release their own consumer products. We see 2017 is really the breakout year for us in terms of both the magnitude of the royalties and the scope of strategic partners that are actually shipping products to the consumer. And we think that we'll be break even from a company standpoint towards the end of 2017. As far as the first to market advantage, that really depends on what product our joint development partner decides to go with first and what the timing of those is. Once the first product is released to the market that is enabled by WhatUp, then all of the market segments are released to us in terms of engaging with other partners in those markets. I would anticipate that it would take, you know, 6 to 9 months after that before you'd see competitive products in the same space or in other in the same business segment.
Great. Okay, and you, no, so good. Go ahead, David, please.
Oh, sorry, Cody. I just had one more if I could here. You had mentioned about over 100 engagements currently. Is there any real maybe natural customer segment concentration that you're really seeing today? Is it more levered towards or maybe geared towards the smartphone, or are you seeing a lot of activity maybe in IoT or tablets or maybe even PCs that you could point to?
Well, I'm gonna let George answer this. George, as our senior VP of sales and marketing, really heads up our overall business development efforts and is also our key strategist. And so, George, you want to take that question?
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Yeah. So, I mean, clearly, we have a fairly significant focus in smartphone and smartphone accessories because it's a touch point that everybody understands and jumps off the page. Clearly, from a transmitter perspective, we're focused on the wireless LAN segment because companies that have a supply chain that supports the development and deployment of wireless LAN and access points is somebody that would know how to build a wireless power transmitter. And so we're focused in that area as not only a key integration point but also a key leverage point as well from a supply chain and a channel management standpoint. But in the other segments, I mean, Steve has already described, we're working in the IoT and battery backpack and gaming and toy area as a near-term opportunity and focus. Again, all driven based on touch points in the home and where there are, you know, real critical needs. I mean, if you have young kids, you know what the problem is with cylindrical cell batteries. You go through them like they're, you know, water out of a hose. And if you're working on IoT devices, you've got these great wireless solutions. They just need power. So, you know, there's some very significant touch points there as well. You know, from another market's perspective, you know, there are, you know, we are focused in the wearable space, remote controls, a lot of automotive accessories, personal care products, a lot of areas in which that, you know, any area you can think of that takes a battery that has a replacement or a charging requirement is a good fit for us. I mean, clearly from our standpoint, though, it's pull it back, be focused, and we're focused in the areas I described previously. Let me just add one additional point because I wanted to kind of comment on the revenue streams real quickly, and then I'll hand it back to Steve. Is one thing to keep in mind, as Steve said earlier, we are a licensing company. So when we sign development and licensing agreements and when we develop products, those are products that people go develop their own products against. So, you know, we can go and sign a development and licensing agreement, as we just did, and it takes sometimes 12 months, sometimes 24 months for those products to hit the market. Doesn't mean that we are not, you know, hitting a beat rate, and we'll start probably talking about design wins and design win activity as we start looking at these kinds of activities in the coming years. But today we're very narrowly focused on these first couple of opportunities, and so they're the ones we're talking about today. Steve, back to you.
I just want to make one additional comment on focus. The WhatUp technology is very, very scalable. We could scale it down to send microwatts of power significant distances in power RFID tags, or we could scale it up significantly and charge a Tesla. But we have focused very specifically on mobile devices 10 watts or less. And so, the markets within this focus, 10 watts or less in mobility, are $1 trillion in terms of TAM. So it's a very significant segment, but we felt it was appropriate for, especially a company our size, to continue to focus down. And as I said, our focus is 10 watts or less in the mobility market. Cody?
Yeah, thanks, guys. And Robert, let's pull for questions in 1 second. I've got one question I want to ask here. We're a little over halfway, and so we'll pull for the field for questions. But before we do, obviously, Steve, George, you're talking about focus, but focus in a very, very large market, and like you said, a lot of opportunities. You're a small company, limited resources, limited headcount. Even with this focus, I could see you easily getting spread into directions where maybe nobody's quite getting the attention that they would like. So how are you managing that other than just paring down the vertical?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things here. First of all, getting this product and this technology in front of the consumer is very important to us. I've said repeatedly now that we believe once the consumer sees the utility of the WattUp-enabled consumer products, that they're going to aggressively drive the adoption. And so our focus now is to work with strategic partners, in particular that have product cycles in the segments that we've talked about, that can get the technology in front of the consumer quickly. In parallel with that, we're also talking to a number of very significant strategic players who have longer product cycles, 2 years into a smartphone or tablet, a year and a half in a wearable. And so, again, this is all part of the process of determining which strategic partners are the best ones for us that will yield not only the best return, but we can see a continuing annuity-based opportunity where you have first-generation product, second-generation product, third-generation product that are WattUp-enabled. Also a big segment for us is in the transmitter, as George said, in the combination of the Wi-Fi router and the wire-free power router, as well as a standalone transmitters to be used in the home. And so those are very big focus points for us. We did go out, as I mentioned last year, for a secondary to expand our team and to be able to support this. But at the heart of everything is for us to develop reference designs that can span a number of strategic partners. And so we're not looking to do one-off developments. We're looking to develop, in conjunction with our strategic partners, reference designs that can go into a number of products, and then our support requirement and burden becomes much less. It's a matter of assisting kind of this cookie-cutter approach to take the technology and then to work with the selected strategic partners in terms of incorporating it actually in the consumer-facing product.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you for that. And, Robert, would you go ahead and poll for questions real quick?
Sure. If anybody has a question at this time, you can press *6 on your phone and then ask your question.
Okay, guys, we'll come back to the field here. Again, your lines are closed or are muted. If you hit *6, it will open. You can ask your question. So just prep for that as we go forward. But, Steve, if we can talk about the technology a little bit, you have some limitation on your reach at 15 feet radius. You also have, from the other side of things, not necessarily for you, but you have advancements in batteries, charging and battery lifespans. Before we get into maybe the the technology of how you're actually charging. What does the advancements in batteries do to your market opportunity?
Well, I think that the advancements of batteries, the chemistries and batteries continue to advance, but the problem is they are not keeping pace with the advancement in the power of mobile devices, and more importantly, in the power of the applications on these mobile devices. And so, while the battery technologies continue to improve in terms of amp hours and the power that they bring to a device, they just have not been able to keep pace with the devices and the applications themselves. I mean, you turn on your GPS application on your smartphone now, and in 2 hours, even with the advancement in technologies, you're out looking or searching for a charging station or a wall plug. And so, again, the mobility revolution is in full swing. Smartphones are used more now than the PCs and the computers. And so the whole element of charging is really beginning to be a major, major problem for the consumer. And that's, again, why we think our timing is so good. And even if the battery charge, the chemistries continue to improve, the problem is not going to go away because as they improve, so is the horsepower of the devices and the applications and the whole myriad of applications that are available for those devices. So again, mobility, the problem is only going to be solved with a mobile solution such as the WhatUp technology.
And so today you, let's say practically have a radius of about 15 feet, you charge faster, you charge at a higher power delivery, closer to your transmitter, you get down to, I believe it's about 1 watt at the 15 feet range. Just as Wi-Fi has been extendable with higher power and higher and longer reach, do you envision your technology to extend that radius and extend that power delivery to higher levels as well?
Well, interesting. When we went out on our roadshow, we actually had on our roadmap a larger transmitter that would support more users and would provide power at a longer distance. However, in working with our strategic partners, they've made it very, very clear that it's better to have multiple points of presence. And so what we've worked on is a pairing technology that allows multiple transmitters effectively to pair. And so you have a virtually unlimited range as it relates to the charging envelope. We demonstrated this quite successfully at the CES show in January, where we had a WhatUp enabled television at the front of the suite. It had a range of about 15 feet. When you walk past 15 feet, we enabled a WhatUp enabled speaker at the back of the room. The two transmitters paired, and you could freely walk and maintain a charge within a 30-foot envelope. So, again, our strategic partners have said the better approach for us is to have multi-point and to concentrate on pairing, as opposed to building bigger and larger dealing with a single point of failure. Also, in the home environment, 15 feet or anywhere within a 30-foot radius is really more of an ideal scenario. So while we could build bigger and larger and it would be more expensive, we think that the proper entry point for us is to concentrate on our current strategy, 15 feet from the transmitter, anywhere within a 30-foot radius, and to pair transmitters to provide or expand the envelope.
Well, let's talk about that expense. So what would be, if you can just talk about maybe some examples, if you had a transmitter, a standalone kind of wall plug transmitter that wasn't built into another OEM device like a TV or a speaker or an appliance, what might that run to the consumer? And then on the other side, on the device side, say it were built into a handset or to a toy or something along those lines, what might that incremental expense end up being impacting to the consumer?
Well, I can give you some examples. Again, this is our strategic partners who are developing these consumer-facing products and what their targets are. We're being told that the standalone transmitters that you'll see in the middle of next year are being targeted at the cost of a Nest, the internet-enabled thermostats that are out on the market today for about $300. And so we would see we understand the target for these full-featured transmitters, standalone transmitters that will hit the market again middle third quarter of next year in the $300 range. In terms of actually incorporated into devices, we would see nominal to minimal increase in price in like a wearable, because our technology and enable to the ability to hermetically seal it within a wearable is really offset by the current contact points and the cabling associated with the charging solutions today. And so we would see nominal increase in like a wearable. In a battery backpack, what we understand the strategies to be is that battery backpacks and their ASPs have been pretty stagnant for the last few years. But what they've done is put larger and larger batteries in them. And so what we're being told by our strategic partners in this arena is that they will put a smaller battery in and add our wire-free charging technology and maintain the same ASP. It'll be just a different SKU. And so, again, no change in the ASP on the battery backpack. On cylindrical batteries, you're talking about pennies to add the technology to the battery. And a low-powered transmitter specifically for battery backpacks, Internet of Things, toys, I think that the target prices are going to be in the $75 range, something like that.
And is there, you mentioned this, I maybe answered to some degree with the smaller battery, but is there, what kind of real estate cost are you talking about on the board? How much space does your solution take up?
On the board, you mean in terms of the battery itself? Again, the ASIC and the antennas are extremely small. I mean, the ASIC itself is 1 mil by 1 mil. And so, again, we're just starting to understand how this is going to fit within the batteries themselves. But the idea is that the technology is small enough that it can be incorporated into the battery itself, and we'll still allow a significant core available for charge.
And Steve, do you have a dedicated ASIC partner that you're recommending your partners work with, your development partners work with?
Well, we will be providing the ASICs initially, and our ASICs come from TSMC. However, we believe that ultimately, our device libraries will be incorporated into other silicon that is resident in these devices. We would see it migrating into BLEs or Bluetooth chips, into power management chips, and that the technology, the what-up technology, would actually be incorporated into these devices. And then what you have is an antenna element, which is a layer on a PCB board, and the software, and that's the full what-up reference design complement.
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand this then. So your ASIC that you'll be supplying, are these just in your development, let's say in this development stages until we get a product that's ready to go to market from your development partners, and then they build that into their own board layout or their own chip layout, or will you be selling ASICs for a time in conjunction in addition to your license fees?
I think both. With our major top-tier consumer product companies, I mean, I think they have enough volume that they'll enable one of their chip providers to incorporate the what-up technology into the chips that are being provided to the particular consumer product company. At the same time, not all of our strategic partners are that big, and they will look to us to provide ASICs for them to incorporate into their consumer products. So I think for a period of time, that we will do both, but over time that we will become less and less of a silicon or ASIC company and more of a technology company that's just providing continuing silicon devices to third party.
So do you envision much profit on those ASICs, or is that just a pass-through kind of cost of doing business to get the end solution ready for market?
Well, I think it's the total package. I mean, there's a royalty, and there is a margin associated with the ASIC. And what George and his team are doing is really negotiating how that will play out. And so, I mean, I think it's the total package. And the higher the power, the higher the royalty. The lower the power, the lower the royalty, or the lower the royalty package. And again, as I said, the ASICs themselves are very, very small and relatively inexpensive.
And maybe, George, that leads us to a question. And I guess when we're modeling, obviously, of a company of this size in this early stage is difficult, to say the least. Can you at least talk about royalty ranges? If you were into something with the volume of smartphones, with kind of the consumer price point of a smartphone, can you think about or give some idea of what a royalty range might look like?
I think I'm going to let Steve answer that one.
Smart man.
Was that a shuffle pass? I think that was a shuffle pass.
I don't know if it's a shuffle pass or a two-step, but whatever it is. So I've got the ball now. We really have been reluctant to talk about our model, obviously, at this stage of the game. As I said, the royalties themselves will really be based on power, high power versus low power, and also on quantities. We're going to be a very, very easy company to do business with. We believe that, as I said, this can be a ubiquitous solution, and so we do not anticipate that our royalty agreements will have significant upfront payments, but will be more performance-based. And so when the products ship, we'll get a per-piece royalty for each unit that is shipped that is enabled with the WattUp technology. It's a better model. It provides more of an annuity. It also encourages a broader base of participation from a potential strategic partners, as opposed to having very significant and onerous upfront charges. And so, again, we believe we're looking to the long term here, and if our ubiquitous model holds up, that we want to have a tremendous, a very, very broad-based strategic partners shipping a lot of transmitters and receivers that are WattUp enabled, and us getting a small piece of each one of them. I can't really go into numbers other than to comment on the ASP model itself. I mentioned some ASPs as an example, the standalone transmitter, that would be about $300. Typical bill of material model on that is it's 25% of the ASP. And so if that's the case, the full bill of material would be $75 to build that transmitter. And our royalty would be a single-digit percentage of that.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to start. And maybe if I can ask that just a little different way, if we're not going to talk about the fees per a consumer device, say a handset, we can probably get a little closer on the modeling of your annual or your quarterly operating expenses. And if you're looking at getting into profitability by the end of 2017, to get to hit that kind of a goal, will you need to be shipping millions of units, or your customers shipping millions of units, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of units? I mean, what kind of we've got some licensed companies that they're getting a nickel per piece. And they have to have such massive volumes to even be successful. And then, you know, we have other spectrums. So, how successful do you have to be just to start recouping some profits?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, our model is very efficient. Our core technology is developed We are not looking to do custom one-offs for the most part. We'll look to provide core reference designs that are usable in a broad range of markets and strategic partners. And so, again, this is not going to be a several hundred person company. It will be a small company dominated by engineers and engineers who develop and engineers who support technology from each partner. Also, I think that there's a roll up here. And as I said, that we'll have a few strategic partners shipping products in 16, and we'll have a whole lot more coming on board in 17. And we want to make sure that it's balanced, and so that we're both shipping or working with strategic partners who are shipping WhatUp enabled receivers, WhatUp enabled standalone transmitters, and WhatUp enabled combination Wi-Fi routers and wire-free routers. You're right. Some of these strategic partners are talking about multi-millions of pieces per year, and so again, it doesn't have to be a lot to really cover our expenses. But the key for us again is we're working here for the long term. We see that there is a true opportunity for us to dominate this market on a continuing basis, and so we'll continue to focus on a market that doesn't provide significant upfront fees, that gives us per piece performance, and these will be pennies per device for the smaller ones, more than that for the larger ones, and you can take a look at the numbers themselves about how many million smartphones are being shipped a year, how many tablets are being shipped a year, my goodness, how many batteries, AAA batteries are being shipped a year. So fractional percentages of any of those markets yield very significant numbers, even at the pennies per unit stage.
And Steve, what do you envision maybe a steady state or at least a good range for OPEX to run between here and 17?
Well, that really depends on the silicon that we will have to develop. Each of the ASICs is a significant development for us. It's running about $1.2 million to develop an ASIC, a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on the complexity. Our headcounts will ramp up, but right now we're running about $2 million a month, and I would see that going up. We had a significant spike in expenses last year around the December timeframe because it was there was significant expense associated with the CES show, and also we developed or commissioned the development of an enterprise class management system that is really a major differentiator for us. I mean, this is a true enterprise class management system that could be forklifted over to a carrier and could allow a carrier to track thousands and thousands of points of WhatUp presence across the United States. And so those expenses have been incurred. The software is in place and development. And so, again, we don't see a repeat of that like we did in the fourth quarter of last year. Right now we're running pretty even at $2 million a quarter. When we do an ASIC, a month. When we do an ASIC, it spikes up $1.3 million. That headcount will probably go up to 2.5, up to 3 million in 2016.
And then, lastly, Robert, go ahead and poll for questions. I've got one last final that I want to talk about on the FCC approvals, the regulations. Robert, if you poll for questions, we come back to that then.
Sure. If anybody has a question, again, you can press *6 on your phone and then ask your question.
Okay. So, Steve, you do have a few parts, Part 15, Part 18 of FCC regs that you need to get through. Can you just talk about the progress, the prognosis, I guess, timing, and any potential hurdles, I guess, that you foresee?
Well, again, we see a clear path to regulatory approvals, and I'm going to kind of just tee this up for George because George heads our regulatory efforts. Part 15 is really a statutory or a very well-defined specification that relates to interference. We're quite comfortable that we'll pass 15. Part 18 is more complex because it deals with emissions or power. We'll also look to pass the CEC, California Energy Commission, Energy Star testing because we obviously want to sell it in California, but our transmitters, as an example, in their idle state require little to no power, so we don't believe that we'll have any problems there. The point being is I'm going to let George go into a level of detail, but we see a clear path to approval on all of these regulatory issues. George, you want to get into some specifics?
Yeah, exactly. I think if you look at what we're doing from a regulatory perspective, it's clearly a combination of things. We've invested pretty significantly in developing our own regulatory lab. So we have now purchased and are building out today the equipment necessary to do our own SAR testing, MPE testing, all the necessary testing to support Part 18 so that when we work with customers, we can collaborate on a real-time basis and not have to go outside to get that testing done. That allows us also to collaborate with the FCC very effectively so that as we work through and share our test and implementation strategies and plans, that they can comment on those as we go through the regulatory process. And so, as we look at the path through to regulatory approvals, as Steve said, we've already gone through our initial confidential KDB process with the FCC. We're in the process of getting feedback and responding, and that's really all about us creating a test plan and a test methodology such that when we go to the FCC, we'll be able to, test as we've agreed and show that we can pass as we've agreed, the tests that we're working on today. As Steve described, we expect to see early indications and early product approvals, hopefully before the end of this year. So some work to be done between now and then, but I think we're on a good path at this point.
Have you had concerns, and I know this is brought up maybe just more from an investor standpoint at times, but surely there may also be some consumer concerns when you're talking about, and unfounded as they likely are, but you're talking about transmission of a power source over the airwaves. Are there concerns of safety, and how do you head that off without causing an issue that might not be an issue in somebody's mind?
Well, I think there's a couple of comments.
Okay.
Let me just kind of tee it up. First of all, I think the consumer is really more comfortable today with the idea of power or things in the air, largely because of Wi-Fi. I know that 15 years ago when we first brought Wi-Fi into the house, my wife was extremely concerned, and now her sole concern today is that she has maximum performance. And so I think that the consumer has really become accustomed to the idea of it. Also, I think it's important to note that we are not a consumer products company. We're a technology company. So we will be enabling consumer product companies to bring products to the market. And so we're going to leverage off the reputation, the safety element of our strategic partners. When you buy something from Best Buy, you believe that it is safe and it is okay for you to use it at the home. And so, again, we work in the background to provide the necessary approvals, but we believe that the reputation of our strategic partners is really going to drive those concerns. George?
Well, I think you hit all the high points, Steve. I mean, the only thing I was going to say is anytime a new technology is brought into the marketplace, there's, people are interested and concerned. I mean, whether it be your cell phone or your Wi-Fi transmitter or even back in the days at the microwave oven, people are concerned when they see a new technology they get comfortable with it, they get comfortable with the testing and the regulatory support that these devices get, and, you know, it's our job to provide as many tools as we can possible to our OEM and ODM partners so that as they go through and introduce these products into the market, they can do that effectively.
Well, gentlemen, that is about our time. We've been here about an hour now. I'll just give one last opportunity for anyone on the line. If you'll hit star six, your line will open up, and if we don't have anybody, Steve, George, we'll hand it back to you for any closing remarks. Again, star six, and your line will open. Go ahead and ask your question.
Cody, I believe we have one question.
Okay, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Will Galvin from Silverado Capital. Thanks. I was just wondering, are there any analog sort of devices that have gone through a similar regulatory process before? And you mentioned like the microwave or things like that, but are there other things in the house that emit this much power that have gotten regulatory approval?
So I'll take that. Thanks, Steve. Well, everything from your microwave oven to your ultrasonic cleaners to your cell phone all have gone through the same type of regulatory approval. Even today, the most recent AC routers are having to go through Part 18 approval. So there's lots of devices that you find in the home, in and around the home today, that have gone through and obtained Part 18. You know, anything that is a transmission or conduction device actually has to go through these processes. It's not something that we're braving new ground per se. We're just kind of following the footsteps of those that have gone before us.
Anything else? Anyone else? Star six, your line will open. Okay, guys. Steve, George, anything you'd like to leave us with?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Cody and David and Robert for the opportunity, and we hope that it was an interesting session today and that we answered any questions that the listeners might have. We believe that Energous represents a significant opportunity. We're obviously very, very excited about it. We understand that there are risks associated with the opportunity. However, we've got a very, very experienced management team that has done this several times before. We have a very clear plan of execution. We know exactly what we need to do and where we need to go and how we intend to get there. We have a history of execution. If you take a look at the company since its inception, our motto has been say what we're going to do and then do it, and I think we have an excellent history of doing that and hitting each of our milestones. We met or exceeded every milestone to date that we've laid out. We understand that the only way that the investor now can judge our progress is through these milestones, and so we continue to be very, very transparent and to be very open in terms of where we are and the things that we need to do to get to the next step. And again, we will continue to execute on that. So, again, we believe that if we keep our heads down and focus and continue to build very good value, that we'll have good options in the future. So I want to thank, again, you all for listening to us, and we hope that we are on your radar screen, and you'll continue to watch and look out for a what-up as we continue to progress. Thank you.
Well, Steve, George, it was a very well-attended call. We thank both of you for your time today. I want to thank everybody for joining us, especially ahead of a long holiday weekend. If you have any questions, of course, I'm always around. I'm sure Steve and George would be happy to answer any as well. So with that, I will say goodbye, and everybody have a good weekend.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for joining our call today with Energous. Just as a program, you know, we do have a call on Monday, April 13th with ARIS, Tuesday with Tower Semi, Tuesday, April 14th with Tower Semi, rather, and Wednesday, April 15th with Resonant. If anybody needs a full calendar for the call series, please give me a call at 646-362-6240. That's 646-362-6240. That'll conclude the call for today. Everybody have a good day.